What is up, podheads? Back with another episode of the Podio Slay podcast. My name is Tony, joined by Anthony. We just had another great conversation with three folks that I'm not sure that we ever thought at the beginning of this we'd be able to talk to. We've had Kevin on twice, which is really cool. And this whole Adobe Radio Summer School Fest idea is something I think near and dear to our hearts and near and dear to theirs. So it was fun to kind of dig into that. But how you doing, man? How are things going?
It's been busy. I mean, usually the canned answer is like, you know, I'm good and good. It's been busy, like everything, you know, and you get the work, family, you get podcasts. And at the end of the day, we always do find time for this outlet. And that's what it is. We love doing this. It's we've always said it's a passion project. It fills that bucket. It continues to do that. Sometimes it's harder to do than you know, some weeks it's harder than others. But at the end of the day, if you like something, you'll find a way to make it happen. For someone that likes to read books, you'll find ways to read that book. If you like music, most people listen to music. For us, we listen to music and then we like to have a podcast about it. So yeah, overall, I'm good. I'm glad this conversation happened and I'm glad we're still doing this.
If we like to ask this question of people that we've talked to over the course of time, if maybe they've been a band member for 25 years or we're looking back on an album or looking back on a company or whatever, and we ask, did younger you see this coming? Anthony, did younger you see us interviewing Kevin Lyman twice?
No, I would say my first Warped Tour was 2001.
Yep.
If you said, hey, dude, in 23 years, you'll be interviewing the founder, I'd be like, okay, what were the series of events that happened?
How'd we get there?
Yeah, how'd we get there? You know, and for us, there's 216, whatever, how many episodes there are that got here. There's an explanation. But yeah, man, he's definitely someone that's inspiring. And to have him be involved in, you know, possibly the next Warped, right? With Summer School.
That's the idea here, yeah.
And working with Eric Tobin, A&R at Hopeless Records, and Mike Kaminsky of KMGMT. It's a pairing that makes sense, and I'm not surprised that they have years of history together.
Yeah, and I know would they get into it a little bit, but Mike and Kevin work together at USC, right? They're both professors. They both teach in the music space, as well as, you know, be still active in the music space, whether it be promoting or managing as Mike does. And then Eric, you know, being A&R Hopeless for a long time, and Hopeless, we've been listening to Hopeless bands for 25 years ourselves. So it was really kind of a, yeah, those guys want to talk, let's do this. Like, this is, we're down, let's talk about this new festival to kind of get some of these headliners of tomorrow, as it were, out into the, you know, to the masses and in bigger venues around the country over the course of the summer, where maybe one of them could get to that point, but not all of them could do it. And now they're all together out, kind of taking turns being the headliner, getting to press the flesh with fans and getting those kids back into the scene, kind of like we were with Warped Tour 20, 25 years ago. So the new one here, the Adobe Radio Summer School Fest, kicking off in July and runs through middle of August. Pretty cool stuff.
Good variety of bands. Stand Atlantic, pop punk from Australia, blowing up right now. They're on Hopeless. You get Scene Queen, who's also on Hopeless, just blowing up right now. You get Magnolia Park. You get The Home Team, Honey Revenge, Letdown. Pretty stacked. And I know the ethos, and we talk all about this, but the ethos of the fest are one that's, you know, it's friendly to your pocket, to your, you know, your dollars, yeah, and dollars, yep, and cents, right? So I think it's like tickets are 30, 35 bucks. You know, there's definitely value there, and you're going to get a good show.
Yeah, you've got sponsors like Hot Topic and 1RPM, and being able to get those tickets down for, I mean, hell, it's 2024. You're going to see seven bands, I think it is, right? For the price of $35. That didn't happen 15 years ago, let alone today. So it's cool. This is an interesting idea. I think it has legs. I think it's going to take off, you know, a la Warped Tour back in the day. And to have these guys on to kind of tell the story of how it came together and what they envision for it, you know, going forward, really cool. Excited to dig into this one.
It's funny. I was looking through our socials just as a music nerd, just kind of reminiscing about what we posted. And we post a lot of like throwback ticket stubs, go to our socials, look at ticket stub prices from 20 years ago. And yeah, there's some value, but some of them are well over $35.
Yeah. Yep.
Back 20 years ago. Yeah. So this is it's new territory, and I think you're going to love this one. You're going to get behind the scenes, you're going to get some talk about the bands, you're going to talk about how this all came together. Yeah, just inspiring stuff from the team that makes sense, you know, that they would even come up with this idea. So I think we're going to get into it now, right? Eric Tobin, A&R Hopeless Records, Mike Kaminsky, KMGMT, and Kevin Lyman. You know, he needs no introduction. So let's get into this. All right, we're here with Kevin, Michael, and Eric. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Good, good. You know, summer's coming, getting warmer.
It is getting warmer, yeah, even for us.
Getting a little warmer. It's nice out, you know, and start getting that itch. Festivals start happening, you know.
So. Absolutely, yep.
Do you know anything about that, or are you?
I had a little bit of a background. It's like, you know, you start getting that little twitch going. And even though I haven't done it in a few years, it was pretty exciting to get, you know, Michael and Eric are old friends. And I grew up, you know, they grew up around what I was doing all those years and kind of been bouncing it around for years. Like, oh, we need to kind of get a developmental tour going. We got to get something going for these bands again. And, you know, I think I was putting them off a little bit on my end. I was enjoying those, you know, that time being a professor. But just, I feel like the timing is right, you know. Money's getting tighter for families, and that cheaper ticket price is important. And discovery of music, and there's a lot of these little bands that I don't know as much about. And Michael can talk to you about more about the bands, because I actually said, you know what, I'm not going to help with the bands. I'll help with the logistics. I can call all the get people fired up about being involved, the local promoters. We got a lot of indie promoters involved. Kind of going, you know, rewinding to that, you know, 1994, 95 time when I was starting to do this the first time. It feels that way again.
Yeah, we got that vibe just reading the press release, and we appreciate being two indie kind of promoters ourselves being able to talk to you guys about it. How did it start? Was it a phone call from Michael to Eric, or Eric to Kevin? How do we get to where we are today?
Somehow it's a short that we've just gotten this thing together yet. I feel like I've been working on it for 13 years so far. So a lot of logistics. Mike, I think this conversation started 2 years ago, maybe even more now, if I remember correctly. It was a conversation about, you know, how do we get new artists on tour? We talked a little bit about a festival. We had some meetings. None of it made sense. And then it kind of went away. And then an artist that Mike and I share together at our illustrious day jobs, we were like, well, what's that next step for them? What's the right tour for them? Who should they support? And I think Mike brought the idea of a branded tour back around, and I might have been a little resistant. And then he said, no, it's really this time. We started getting into it, and it felt very good. And then said, let's go meet with Kevin. And we went, and Kevin fed us, as he often does to all of his friends. That's how I stay alive, is Kevin's nice barbecue. And in that process, Kevin sort of gave us the positive nod that this was something that a lot of his friends and colleagues were still super excited about. And we sort of stepped back and started talking to the artists and the managers and put something together with the goal that was to develop artists like the, you know, Kevin's history, you know, like who are those artists that are right at that cusp of being very big, and how do we go support that and put that together? So I think I got that right. Mike, Kevin, did I do a good job on that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it was, we've also, you know, got a lot of really cool companies that are starting to bobble up that are kind of looking for a way to engage the community. So through their relationships and the people that, you know, they were able to go out and kind of get support for this. And it's, you know, I've been always very, very honest when anything I've been involved in that it's driven by sponsorship dollars. You know, it's great to be all punk rock and say, oh, we don't want to do this, but to really make these things work and to keep that ticket price, right, you depend on those sponsors. So all of a sudden this discussion started going out of the circle here with indie promoters. And then it was all of a sudden with some companies like Adobe, who is supporting the tour. You got One RPM supporting the tour. And, you know, Eric and Mike both do a lot of work with Hot Topic, who I used to do many, many years ago, and got them engaged in the conversation. So it's kind of like it just started to pick up momentum. And it was like they had a great idea, and they did a lot of the pre-talking with the bands and the management. So get everyone on the same page about how this has to work, because it you know, I've always said it takes everyone taking a half step back to move two steps forward. And, you know, it can't be about any one entity or one thing on a tour like this. It has to be everyone kind of going, okay, we are going to be part of this ecosystem and support it in any way we can through marketing, maybe with our dollars, maybe we've got something we could trade for it. Like literally today, I've been talking to drink companies about drop shipping, like drinks out to every site to be able to keep the catering costs down, because we're going to have quite a few people for those size venues. So it's felt good that, you know, you see it on the large level. We lost a lot with the pandemic. A lot of people lost a lot of momentum. Brands want to be involved in music, you know, and a lot of them can't afford to be out of things like, you know, some of these large festivals that I've been visiting recently, like Coachella or anything. But there can be something around this scene and pull it all together into that community to get again. And, you know, we're throwing in the charitable side, do it with 50 cents a ticket going to charity off of every ticket. It's going to save the music. And it feels good, you know. And Mike is also an educator at USC, as I am. And we got a couple of our students going out on the road with the tour, to giving some young crew people a chance out on the road.
That's awesome. I love that.
Like an internship type of thing? Or?
Well, they're getting paid.
A paid internship.
We wouldn't go that far to them, you know.
it's the other way around. Kevin, Mike, and I are getting the intern wage. The USC kids are getting the pay. It's very exciting.
And taking all the risk. Yeah.
No, it's their first job. Actually, that's a really important point, because, you know, Eric and I probably entered Warped World. I was going in high school. It was like year 14 or 15. Which is when I met Kevin. And, you know, what a surreal experience to then start working in music. So I'm a music manager, and Eric has run an independent label that's very well, you know, known, especially in the scene and in the community. So we work together a bunch, but we also kind of have our own communities that we have. Crazy to be, you know, going to Warped Tour and discovering bands that way and sort of seeing the process, and then having artists on Warped and being part of that experience. And I think one of the, you know, really important things there is, like, bands learn how to be a band, right? They learn how to tour. They build a community. So this isn't just unifying fans. It's actually unifying artists. You know, how many artists are like, oh, yeah, you know, we spent 2 months together in the trenches. We became friends. And, you know, that sort of led to collaborations or future tours. But it's also where, if you go to Coachella, every other crew person, you know, I see at Coachella, started as like the tour manager of their band who was playing the parking lot of Warped Tour. And, you know, the crew learns how to become established and kind of work their way through and establish themselves. I think it's been hard for some of the next generation, especially post-COVID, whether you're, you know, a fan or an artist or someone who works in the industry, it's not easy to just find that community anymore. And it can kind of be isolated. And I think, you know, especially post-COVID, when we're talking about how this started, you know, Tobin and I think as soon as you know, Warp sort of wrapped up, Eric and I were going like, what do we do? Because as a manager, I've been doing this for 20 years. We have a lot of clients over the years. Every artist I've ever had, you know, during the Warp years has played Warped. And that was a really instrumental part. As a manager, we sit down and we build a 3-year plan. And every part of that plan was, okay, it's got to be live focused. And, you know, I sit here now and these artists, you can go on TikTok and sort of have your trending moment, and that's great. Or you can have, you know, something happen on Spotify, and that's great. But my biggest challenge as a manager is, how do you get people to care about an artist and not just the song? And that's a really, really, really big challenge. And we think about that a lot. And you can have a song go viral, and you can have a song do its thing, and that's really wonderful. But if people don't know who it's by, or they're not going to go support your artist the next time they put out a song, or they're not going to buy tickets or merch, then it's a flash in the pan. So our job is constantly trying to figure out, how do we actually convert these people to be like, oh, this artist is really cool. And still, to me, and maybe I'm like old school in saying this, but the way you translate that is just, you know, take it down from this digital altar and you connect it live. And when people come out and they get to see your artist and they see the performance and they're surrounded by a community of kids who also believe in the same thing, and they get to meet your artist and say hello, and they're all taking pictures with them, and that's, you know, flooding social media, and everyone gets to see this as a real thing, and it's fun and it's exciting. and it's not just something that lives, you know, on your phone. That's a really crucial part of artist development, you know, to me. And so I think Eric and I were talking, like, where does this exist? Where does it happen? How do we do this? And it wasn't really happening on its own. You know, I think we sort of thought there'd be something to kind of fill that void when Warped retired. And it just, you know, wasn't there. And I think we just said, well, I don't know if any of us particularly wanted to get back into touring festival business, but it yeah. wasn't happening, and we need it, right? So we started it.
But let's really touch you guys on the name, okay? How cool is that name, Summer School Tour?
Oh, absolutely. It fits perfect. Whose idea was that?
I was sold on this when you know, every dumb name has been put together for a festival in history now, right? And match up every name a tour. And we were doing the same thing, putting names together. And then all of a sudden, Mike or Eric, one of them was like, Summer School Tour, and it's available. Like, that was like a must. Like, once that name came together, Summer School Tour, it was like a must do tour. Like, yeah, you had perfect. To do it.
I think I was pounding Mike every day at the end of last year, like, what's the name of this? You know, like, I have to go have a conversation. What's the name of this? And I kept coming back with a lot of names, and I kept saying, new scene with the umlaut over the U. Well, that'll be funny. And how about new school? And I kept saying, school kept coming up, and Mike's like, it's not, we can get to that. There's a lot of pieces until we name this thing. I was like, I can't function without the name. And then Mike texted Kevin and I and said, Summer School, it's not taken. Let's go. I'm like, what the?
Bang.
Who is this man?
So once you got a name like that, and it's perfect, trying to develop artists, and you're going out, and it's in the summer school. So it works really well. And that's the hardest part about these things, is coming up with a name mm-hmm. that works, I think.
Totally.
Except about a weekend, I got to say this, Mike and Eric, about a weekend, once the planning and getting the band, they both text me and go, wow, this is so much work.
Of course.
For 25 years we got 6 bands, and I was like, yeah, it wasn't like I was just sitting by a pool drinking margaritas putting this stuff together. It's a grind putting these tours together and then making those budgets work, because we did, you know, we set that ticket price, and you know that we were going to hit, you know, going, you're kind of going, you have to push the cart down the hill all at once, so you're kind of chasing that funding, and people came in and helped support it, you're chasing the support from the promoters, and you're trying to convince some brands to come help ride it before it hits the wall at the bottom. And it's actually working, and people are pretty excited about it. You know, I was out talking to a couple of the promoters this weekend, and you know, it's one of those things, there's no huge rush to run out and buy the ticket, you know, but we'll get there. It's selling well for so early on. It's great.
Yeah, super happy.
Well, one of the principles, so it this is a lot of work, right? And one of the principles, we came together, we said, look, there's a few things that are really important to us. We're going to do this, you know, this isn't, you know, a cash grab for us. It's not something we're trying to, like, you know, sell off in a year or two. Like, we really have to figure out, how does this fill a hole in the music industry and for fans and within the scene? So there were a few things that were important. So every artist is independent, every label is independent, every promoter is independent. You know, we went to the people where this is really, they put themselves out there, they live or die, it's skin your teeth sometimes. But we all got to be invested in this thing, you know, emotionally and practically and logistically. And the other thing was, if we're going to do this, it's got to be about music discovery, right? It's not about, you know, just trying to get some big headliners. There's a lot of people who do that, and they do a super good job with that, and they don't need one more. So how do we do music discovery? So there were two components of it. One, all the headliners were going to rotate, right? So you have to, you get to come all day, you get to, maybe you haven't heard of every band, but hopefully you leave discovering one or two that maybe you didn't know about. And, you know, you got to sell this to the bands and their managers and their agents and their teams to say, like, okay, well, you're not, this isn't a headline tour. This is, you know, kind of an interesting package. And the last component was, and this was maybe the hardest part, was we said, we're going to do this. It doesn't work unless we can come in at a ticket price where, you know, what it would cost to see one of these bands, you can see 6 of them. So how do we do that? So we ended up saying, you know, we had to call all these artists and explain this concept and, you know, try and get this thing going. And we had to tell people, like, okay, well, it's going to be $30 to $35, and you get to come and get to see music all day. And that's really difficult to do, right? Because you can't do it with just a, you can't do it just by selling tickets. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the importance of sponsors. So it kind of maybe led us to the final piece of this, which is if sponsors were going to get involved, we weren't taking money from anyone to just kind of like put their name on something. The sponsors really had to be integrated into what we were doing. They had to add value to the artists, or they had to add value to the fans, or they had to add value to the tour in some way. And it was kind of wild to us that we needed to raise a lot of money to lower the ticket price. Like, the money we raised goes directly towards subsidizing the price of the ticket. And I mean, who knows if people are going to believe in that or not, right? Like, you got to just start calling people saying, right, here's our idea. If you want to be involved, you're going to be more than just, you know, banners around a venue or something like that. Like, let's really do something different. And it's wild to me. I think all the bands we called were like, we're in. And the sponsors, there were some sponsors we didn't even pitch. Like, they came to us. They were like, hey, we heard you're doing this thing.
Nice.
You need some money. We really want to support this thing. And yeah, we said, absolutely. So we have a package of, you know, six artists for $30, $35. I think doors open at 4 o'clock most days. And you get to come and, you know, for $30, $35, maybe there's a few bands you haven't heard of before, but you're going to come, right? You're going to meet a lot of friends. You'll be part of the community. Hopefully, you know, discover some music that you hadn't seen before.
Well, and that price point is difficult 15 years ago, let alone in 2024. So
yeah,
kudos to you guys for getting all those people. that's wild. Like, and at my age, to see a $35 ticket and that many bands, I'm like, that is amazing. I remember doing that in 2004. Uh-huh. Maybe, yeah, paying that for five or six bands, depending on what you were seeing and where you were seeing them. So uh-huh. pretty cool that's happening in 2024, 20 years later.
It's how we're fighting inflation here at Summer School Touring. We'll just lower the price and people will follow suit. We just expect.
So fingers crossed, man.
So you guys had the idea. You got the team. You got the ethos of the fest. You got the name. You got the sponsors. Was the pitch to the bands easy? Because if I'm on the receiving end of that, and it's like, wow, that all sounds great, I would think I'm in immediately.
I think as a manager, I'll start this one off, right? Because one of the pitches was to my own artist. So we manage Stan Atlantic here at the company. And there is a real challenge these days, I think, of, you know, you can go out, you can grind and grind and grind. You can have a big moment go viral, right? There's things that can happen. And you can go sell 1,000 tickets. And maybe if you keep pushing, you can go sell like 1,500 tickets. But there's not really a clear path to go sell 5,000 tickets anymore. And as a manager, my job is to sort of study this and, you know, and build the plans for our artists. And really, you know, going back to what I was saying before, part of the plan was, okay, when we have an artist that's selling 1,000 tickets or 2,000 tickets, if you go do Warped, at the end of Warped, you're now selling 4,000 or 5,000 tickets, right? The fall and the next time you go out. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, it makes sense that festivals want to go, you know, to where it's maybe a more established band or a little safer band. And some of the more legacy artists kind of package up with other legacy artists and you get these giant super tours. And that's all great. You know, we're not taking anything away from it. But as a young new artist, there is a place that we need to go to figure out how to break that glass ceiling of maybe selling 1,000 tickets or so. So when we called the artists and we explained it conceptually, it's like, look, not only are we going to make a cheaper ticket, we are going to, you know, use the sponsor money to hire publicists, to do PR teams, to do advertising for you. There's going to be a whole campaign. Let us help you break these artists alongside us. I think everyone immediately was like, yeah, we know that needs to happen, right? That is a space in the music industry, especially in this scene, that's been missing. And we have a lot of artists that can go sell 1,000 tickets or 1,500 tickets. But if you really think about who are the future headliners, right? Like, how do you get the next version of a lot of the great stuff that we're seeing these days? There's not any like clear standouts, I think, really. There's, of course, some exceptions. And so they really did like unify around the idea of, okay, let's go do it. And they believed in it and they have to support it. And it's completely to Kevin's point. You know, it's scary to maybe take a half a step back and not go out and do your own thing again. You're putting a lot of trust in us. But I think they did, right? They pretty much all said yes. Yeah. And let's figure this out.
No, I think they all did. I mean, you know, Mike, to that point, and even in the subsequent conversations, I think everyone is just this idea of this tour is not a foreign one to anyone. I think everyone's sort of, you know, again, post-warped, looking for that opportunity to say, how can we package up together and say, this is for a 13 to 25 year old, this is their brand. This is where they want to go. This is where they want to go discover and say, I was there for, you know, the new Blink-182, the new Green Day, you know, whoever that is that we're hoping to find out there. And I think most of the managers saw that. And I think finding a way to put everybody together and build that camaraderie. And look, these days, these artists collab together, do a lot of things together. So this opportunity, every artist and manager I work with is incredibly talented and very good at what they do. And I feel like they saw the opportunity in a big way and got very excited by it. So, probably was harder for Mike and I to start the initial conversation, like, oh no, what if they say no, than it was post when they said yes, which felt really good.
Well, back when Kevin was doing, in the early days of Warped, the numbers and metrics weren't there. Nowadays, you can go down the biggest rabbit hole with metrics. Did that play a part in like picking markets? And I know that the ethos was to keep it independent. So I'm sure there's probably a push and pull with all that.
Well, I think we ended up with 28
yeah.
shows. But we went out and talked to a bunch of the promoters and they went back into their markets, because that's the one good thing about having those kind of indie promoters involved. They really know their markets. And, you know, they could tell us like, oh, this won't play up in Omaha. There's a scene going on up there. And giving them the trust and letting them kind of dictate the offers where they wanted to come in. And working together, and we had about 38 cities looking at it, I think, right around there. So we had to pull some out because that would be way too long for a first run tour. And we arrived, you know, maybe originally we talked about 25 cities, but there was three in there. So we're doing 28 shows, but we're kind of putting a lot of trust on those people really understanding their local markets and where they think they could bring enough attendance to for this type of a show. You know, if you look at the routing, there's some of the big cities aren't even in there. You know, there's a few that are, you know, we're playing some of the smaller places that maybe have a little scene going on, someone that knows the market and can bring this in and then really grab onto it and make it their show of the summer.
Well, as someone who grew up in one of those smaller cities, I appreciate that. So thank you for bringing that stuff to those places, because those places oftentimes get overlooked and maybe they have a scene, and you know, finding that out. And you, like Anthony said, you can get into those metrics a little more nowadays, probably with all the Spotify numbers and Apple Music numbers, and find out, you know, where your bands play. But it's great to have some of those smaller venues, smaller markets get a little love too.
Yeah. And you can, the funny thing is, I'm saying this and I'm, I teach at USC with Kevin. One of the classes I teach is data, so music, data, and technology. And so we learn, you know, as a 19-year-old, how algorithms work and, you know, sort of deconstruct a lot of this process. And with that said, you know, you can use a lot of data to inform what's going on. But, you know, sometimes it's really just you got to have your ear to the ground and know what's happening, right? And sometimes my band's favorite place to go play are some of these, you know, the markets that they don't normally get to go to, because we all live in Los Angeles here. I could, you know, trip over three shows tonight and go have a good time. And we're very blessed to be able to have that experience. But, you know, maybe in another market in the Midwest, when something comes to town, it's a big deal, right? And those kids go crazy for this. And they really do have that as a place to unify themselves towards a scene. And I think that's, you know, what's really important, especially if you go back to, you know, looking historically at, you know, grunge came from a community that was really, you know, going in Seattle. And then, you know, my first foray into music was, you know, I guess part of the like emo post-hardcore kind of metal scene that was coming out of Long Island with all of those people. Those words didn't even exist, right? Like emo didn't exist. And I was like, but that was coming out of, you know, a bunch of musicians sitting under a bridge in Long Island and working together. So I feel like you have to sort of identify that stuff early and foster it and give it some energy and give it some fuel and give it some support. And that's what turns into sometimes a global, you know, phenomenon. So it was partially informed, I think, by data, but it was also partially informed by us going like, we would be a really cool, interesting place to sort of bring this energy and give it some attention.
Well, one of the things that, you know, Tony and I are pushing 40, so late 90s, early 2000s, we love the mix bill. The mix bill. And that's what I like about this tour. It's like no one sounds the same, right? There's a good mix. Was that part of it, just to give a full experience?
You know, I don't know if that, I love that too, as someone who is pushed over 40 now, who, you know, my music experience started in 94. I think the community as a whole is without subgenre in a lot of ways now. Like, it's about excitement and entertaining. And you know, as a 90s kid, I really love that. I think we got lucky with this build being like that. We're lucky that the community, that demographic or that age of kid is sort of has a myriad of different influences from their parents on all the way up, and the music's starting to show that, and an artist can get big. I mean, you know, Scene Queen, who's near and dear to my day job, you know, this genre is interesting. The genre is Scene Queen. You know, there is, I wouldn't know what else, who else to compare it to, right? And I think we're lucky in the way too, because when you're talking about demographics, for the three of us, we've known the managers, in some cases, all the artists personally, you know, and I think the thing that the data can't really show you in the future is a lot in the case that these kids are working super hard, right? So I think that it didn't really matter in a sense of, you know, and this is not to disparage or demean that what they're creating, like their sound is unique and amazing to them, and they're out selling it, working harder than any artist we know. And I think that work ethic by knowing the people makes that difference. So that's, you know, did we choose an eclectic lineup on purpose? We always want it to be diverse in a lot of different ways. That'll always be a goal of this tour, is to keep it diverse across a lot of different levels. But I think that always want to work on those artists that look the same thing we've always known. Those that know how to do it well and mean something to a kid. That was all of us crushing up to a barricade. If you mean something to that kid and you're working hard to give that kid more than what they thought they could get out of any other relationship in their life, then it's going to grow. And I think that's how this lineup comes together. And it just, like I said, it just happens to be that the sort of genre of angry alternative kid, we'll call it, doesn't really have a sound barrier, in my opinion.
Doesn't. No. As two aging adults, yes, that we can confirm that.
Well, and I love that ethos, because like, you get all of those, we grew up with those, and then, you know, 20 years down the line, we remember those bands that told us about playing in the parking lot at Warped Tour or something along those lines, and now we're talking to them 20 years out and they're still bands and they're huge now. You know, like, it's amazing to see that happen, and that's, we'd love to see that happen with what you guys have got going this way with the summer school. So I love that, and I love that getting as many people invested in your bands and having the bands be invested in those kids that are standing up front. Like, it's a two-way street. If that happens, you've hit it out of the park.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's crazy to go see, you know, this was long before my time, right? But to see Haley and Paramore and stuff, like, playing the parking lot of Warped Tour, and now 20 some years later, you know, opening for Taylor Swift on just a level, you know, who could connect all of those dots, right? But something had to go get that started. And Kevin and Tobin and myself, we all work in music because it's still very meaningful to us. And it was very meaningful to us when we started, and it continues to be, right? So I think if there's anything that we can be doing to essentially give back to a community that gave to us, is to, you know, help build something for the next generation, a fan, an artist, and give everyone a place to go, you know, have music discovery that's not TikTok. And there's nothing wrong with finding stuff on TikTok, but the friends that I still have 25 years later, you know, I met at a Taking Back Sunday show, and we would sit on Yahoo message boards and like deconstruct lyrics together. We're still friends, right? Like, Eric and I, we used to sleep on each other's couch when we passed through town, living off $5 a day when we were on tour, right? And you know, now we're best friends and getting to work together on projects and things like that. So this is really, I think, us from our perspective going, look, we are one generation removed, but this is important to us, and this is what made us who we are, and how do we help build and shape this for the young version of us?
I love that. As I mean, we've been doing this for 4 years. This will be episode 215 or whatever. I can't tell you how many times I brought up a sampler that was handed to me at Warped Tour, or a band I discovered at a fest or at Warped Tour. That's the connection. TikTok, not as much. You know, it's the experience, and you know, you do get a little bit of experience with online and whatnot, but it's being in the room, and this will get people in the room.
Yeah, it gets me in a bandwagon for the first time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you know, it's like we're trying to figure out how to, you know, I'll be out for a bit of the tour, and it's funny for me to be able to finally say I'm going to ride in a bandwagon, since those were actually created on Warped Tour as a mid-level vehicle between mm-hmm. a van and a bus, and I kind of never went through that. So that's why I'm still involved, because I get to ride on one. You know, I was in a bandwagon. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I am also excited to see Kevin in a bandwagon. So my dream was to wake up at this age with these other two guys in a small container. It's been a real dream of mine. So yeah.
Going one step back to go two steps forward, right? That's what this is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're never too old to go backwards.
Well, it's like that show Undercover Boss, right? You know, it's the
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Somehow I think that they'll know exactly where we step out. It'll be two guys holding their backs and their knees as they climb down those precarious steps. And they're like, we know who those guys are.
Yeah.
No, it'll be a lot of fun. Hello, youths. Yes. No, but I mean, I think that if we're on that subject, like it's kind of exciting, I think, for all of us who have done the touring. And I haven't been out on a tour outside of, you know, working with the artists for many years. I'm just excited to be a part of, even for just a few days. Obviously, we're still, you know, doing what we do during the day, all of us. But I will say to Kevin's bandwagon note, like we couldn't, Mike and I can't survive without Kevin's logistical knowledge that he has hard won over many years of doing this. I sometimes read the emails he's sending. I'm like, man, if only I knew what you knew, Kevin. I know it took a long time to get there, but it's profoundly helpful. I think it's interesting to talk about, like, you know, division of labor and all that. Like Kevin brings, you know, and I'm, such an enormous amount of experience to this that is very cool to work alongside, and I always have to spread that compliment to you, Kevin. We're on a call. It's important to recognize the history and the talent you bring, and we're prideful to be able to ride in that.
But let me tell you, sometimes it's easier to just do something in a big parking lot. We carried all those semi trucks versus trying to squeeze everything into a small venue.
I bet. Yeah.
You know, you have a little bit more constraints, but. We're going to try to bring some extra stuff to the show, you know, hopefully have some tabling for some nonprofits. We're, you know, be doing some stuff out there and try to make it the starting point, you know, and then if it works, you go to a little bit bigger space. And you know, that's a nice thing that I think so many people want to jump to this level so quickly that it mm-hmm. does take time. It takes patience, time to build a brand that will last.
So, and you said something, Eric, that kind of piqued my interest. We had this question already kind of prepped, but you did the Warped Tour thing, obviously, you know, mid-90s on. Are there things with this you're trying to recreate, and are things with this that you're trying to avoid? All three of you had, you know, a hand in that in some way, shape, or form, whether it be artists on it, going to it, or putting it together and making it run for all those years. Are there things you're trying to avoid and things you're trying to, like, make happen again?
I think that the thing that we're mostly trying to make happen is that idea, again, that there is a community of kids that need to have a place to go and call their own, right? And I think there's some really great festivals and tours out there we're sort of in league with, right? I mean, this is just that opportunity to continue that, the ethos that was Warped. I mean, you know, again, you guys say you're from a small town, so was I told the story the other day that, you know, Warped Tour came around in 96. I went to it, I made my own t-shirt, the whole thing, like, and I went there and I really felt like I was part of something. I looked around and said, oh, I belong here, you know, like I only thought there was 23 of us in my hometown that liked this style of music and everybody hated us. But at Warped Tour, there was 15,000 people that looked like me and told the same story, and it was really something. And I think that what we're trying to do is continue that this alternative music world, you know, acts together, lives together as part of a larger community that we mean something to. You know, we mean something to. What are we trying to avoid? Letting that community waste away. You know, would be the words. I mean, it's the opposite of what I just said. You know, I want to avoid that. And I think, you know, it goes back to the other questions. The artists we're choosing, I think, belong in this community. They work hard. They mean something to these kids. And this is a place for under $35. You can come and be a part of that. Feel like, oh, yeah, you know, even though maybe I didn't like one of these artists on here, I like this concept. We'd all be here together to debate it. And I'm sure for you guys, too, from about 15 until 23, I had a lot of extreme debates where I lost friends over artists that they didn't like that I liked. And
well, of course.
Builds character. So I think that's, you know, and I would think that Mike and Kevin agree. Like, it's the idea is to avoid this community feeling like it doesn't have its new artists, you know, that it doesn't have their new Blinks and Green Days and Taking Back Sundays and all of that.
Avoid getting in fight with kids on the internet. That's my goal.
Yeah, there you go.
I have that goal for you too, Kevin.
That's my goal too. Yeah, you know,
Kevin let me, when I was starting my company, I had just signed an artist 303, and Kevin let me rent office space from him, right? Because I was young, I didn't have a mentor, I didn't know what to do or where to go. And so much, I think, of what has allowed me to do management for 20 years was sitting there and watching Kevin and his approach on something like Warped, where, you know, something like the rotating bill, that's hard to get past agents, right? Whose job, agents, some very close friends of mine are agents, right? But it's their job to fight for billing and to say, hey, you know, we got to close this show and we got to be the big name at the top and to sort of hold the ground and say, hey, you know what? As soon as you do that, your music discovery, you know, plummets because some of the biggest names could go on. You know, Fall Out Boy might be playing at 3 o'clock. So get there early and come and stay and make sure you come see her. And that was really cool. And, you know, I still remember Kevin sitting down and, you know, taking out a pad of paper and figuring out how many hours a kid would have to work at minimum wage to be able to go buy a ticket to Warped, right? And the difference between, you know, $2 a ticket on the tour and really fighting to, you know, keep that cheap and allow kids to come out and, you know, see new artists and get more people through the door, because those are the people who continue to come back over and over and over again, right? There's a reason why Warped lasted 25 years. So I think some of the foundational, you know, ethos of it all is really inspired from that. And, you know, we're not going to lie. I mean, I wouldn't have a career if, you know, Kevin hadn't mentored me for a long time and allowed me to go rent an office from him for a decade, you know, above a barbecue restaurant and, you know, an attic basically. And, you know, that's meaningful. So let's, you know, let's recreate it. It worked. I don't think those ideas are old. It can continue on for the next generation.
Yeah, it's just important to tweak it and make it its own. You know, we learn from the past, but we want to make something their own. That's what I tell my students all the time. You know, duplication is great, but you want to create, you use the foundations of things, but then you create your own brand and you do your own thing. And this is going to have a lot of fresh energy and ideas. And I'm sure there's going to be kids that see this. And if it goes, they'll come with the next ideas like we used to do on Warped Tour. A lot of times that was someone with a good idea coming by the office, and whether it was doing the blood drives we used to do or the canned food drives or things, those were all inspired by, you know, people coming to my office to say, this is what we need to do. We need to, you know, help the blood banks, and okay, let's figure this out and use this vessel that was Warped, you know, but now it could be summer school. As you go, you have to be sound business minded to make sure that you can operate something. But then as you start doing it, you can start opening it up to more and more things. And as the venues expand, you bring more ideas in. And, you know, I hope for everyone that they grab onto something like this, because they really don't have something. And festivals are fantastic, but they've become out of reach again for 90% of the population can't afford to go to these festivals. And I know the operators of the festivals, they're putting, it's very expensive to produce these festivals right now. And this is like creating that show for the other 90% of the kids that may wake up that week, you know, and 2 weeks out, they got $40 in their pocket. And you know what? I'm going to be able to go entertain myself. And there's my experience for that summer. And, you know, we never really looked at it as something for, we always looked at it for the 90% of the kids that might not be able to go to one of these other things when we were doing work. And I think this summer will be for a lot of those kids this summer, because money's tight. We all know credit card debt's up. We all know people are going to be looking to be entertained for a value this summer. We've got this kind of hidden recession in America right now. You know, it's you know, not out there every day in our faces. Economy, jobs, people, everyone's working. But with inflation, you know, people are going to be, you know, when they're worried about, you know, putting gas in their tanks and putting food on the table, they still need to entertain themselves this summer. And this will probably be enough energy to burn off. So you can, like one woman during the last, who told me after, she said, Warped was a great value. My kids ran around for a full day. They were so sunburned and tired, they laid on the couch for three more days. If I sent them to a movie, they were bored. And another hour later, they were going, what am I going to do now? You know, so it's a value proposition too. You can come run around in circles and maybe be able to watch all that Netflix for the next few days. And there's a few days of the summer.
Well, hey, kudos to you guys for having an idea. Like I said, the right team, right bands, logistics, over 25 cities, kicks off July 10th, Cleveland, Ohio, goes all the way. I mean, it hits everywhere, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, pretty much all the big cities, some other, you know, secondary, tertiary markets, and it wraps up in Anaheim, right?
Anaheim.
In August.
August 17th, yeah.
We'll Stan Atlantic, Magnolia Park, the home team, Scene Queen, Honey Revenge, Letdown. We're familiar with all of them. I mean, what's not to like, right?
I don't disagree with you on that. I'm very happy about it. I'm actually pretty excited to just see the show. I think every band out here is very awesome. I have, and even Letdown, who I've gotten to know recently, was one of those like, wow, I think I told the label, like, you guys really won here. He's amazing. So I'm pretty excited to see the show myself.
Yeah, lost in all this is there's a pretty awesome bill there, right? Like, go check out the music for $35. Get all these bands. That's perfect.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that we loved as kids, and I'm glad that it's still happening. You know, as me, as an almost 40-year-old, you guys are pulling it off for the next generation of kids to go find their bands. You know, maybe you like one of them, go check the whole bill out, because you might like them all. And that's the best part about tours like this.
And by the way, 35 to 50-year-olds are welcome. It'll make Mike and Kevin and I feel a lot more welcome in the venue. So please come on down.
Bring your kids, right? Bring your kids.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Please. Yeah. Really great, guys. We love it. And thank you so much for the support. And I hope to see you. Where are you based out of?
Portland, Maine.
Portland, Maine, baby.
Well, we'll see you in Worcester. Who knows? Yeah,
Worcester is...
Eric's like, I got nothing for you guys.
We're familiar with Worcester. We've been down.
You're on your own.
I mean, I'm from New England. So, I grew up in Berkshire, in the Berkshires coming up. So getting to a show was, my first work was Tri-County Fairgrounds, Northampton. So
many drive years a little ago. Bit too. Yep. Yep. No, yeah. And that's the best part about all of that is finding the friends that want to get in the car and go to the show. So it's harder at our age with the kids and all that stuff going on, but we make it happen every now and then.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, well, thanks, guys.
Sweet. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Well, appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Take it easy. Bye. Appreciate it, guys.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast. YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us $1, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.
You guys got it down. It only took 215 episodes, but you guys got it down now.
We figured it out.
You guys are winning. You guys are pros now. You know,
we were a little better than the last time we talked to you. I hope
you know how to fish out the sound bites, and you'll be able to cut it up into a nice little episode.
Hopefully.
Of course, great to see you both.